What is up, you brinded cats? Welcome to No Holds Barred. Before we launch it, I'm going to hitch up with the word of the week. This is where we take a word that is Shakespearean, confusing, off-putting, makes you hate Shakespeare when you read it for the first time because you have no idea what it means. I will tell you what it means, break it down, give it to you in a sentence, and then try to sneak it past Kevin during the podcast. This week, the word of the week is hither. Hither. H-I-T-H-E-R. If you are in New York City, I hope you will come hither this Sunday for Kevin and I's annual non-denominational holiday party. Here we go. Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week we'll get ready, relate to a king, and give notes on incoming White House chief strategist Steve Bannon's abandoned screenplay adaptation of Titus Andronicus, titled simply Andronicus, that features Titus as the leader of an intergalactic army on a mission to save planet Earth, and who are forced to take human form when their mission goes awry.
Sounds good.
But first, let's duel. In the duel, we take three questions at the intersection of Shakespeare and the present day and take 45-ish seconds to hash out the best answer. Dan won the coin flip before the show.
Yes!
And has elected to go second, so I will lead us off.
That's right.
Question number one. Matteo Pengallo emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com this week to ask, with the current transition of power in Washington, I'm wondering which Shakespearean characters you would want to fill major cabinet posts in your administration. So I'm just going to, you know, I Googled this. There are like eight podcast. There are like 12 posts. There are a lot of cabinet
posts. There's 16.
Posts.
16 posts. Yep. Including all the right. VP.
Yeah. And I'm not filling all of those. I'm just going to fill three. So I pick three.
Great.
For Secretary of State, mm-hmm. I'm going to take the King of France from All's Well That Ends Well,
okay.
Who I like very much. He's well liked. He's been through the wars. He's seen some things. He's very old. He also understands his role in these things. He says he fills a place. So I think he'd be good at good sense of humor. The Chief of Staff, I'm going to take Albany from King Lear.
Okay.
It's a man who does what's right, even when his superiors tell him it's not, and I like that type of chutzpah. And for Secretary of Defense, I'm going to cheat and just take Othello, because Othello's awesome, and I want the best, and
sure.
I took the King of France, so I feel like I've earned a gimme. So yeah, I will take Othello, KOF, and Albany for my cabinet.
Not bad. I went with the entirety of the cabinet. So I have all 16 positions coming at you rapidly. I also followed our rule of doing one from each play. So without further ado, here we go. Vice President Don Pedro from Much Ado. Secretary of State Menenius from Coriolanus. Secretary of the Treasury Malvolio from Twelfth Night. My Attorney General, like Portia from Merchant, undefeated in court. Department of the Interior, Caliban from The Tempest. Homeland Security, Othello from Othello. Same reason as you. Health and Human Services, Paulina from Winter's Tale. Energy is going to be Hotspur from H4, Part 1. Department of Education, how about Holofernes from Love's Labor's Lost? Department of Defense, Henry V. Commerce, let's go with Simonides from Pericles. Agriculture, Titania from Midsummer Night's Dream. Housing and Urban Development, Cleopatra from ANC. Department of Labor, Kent from Lear. Department of Transportation, Balthazar from Romeo and Juliet, because he's always traveling.
And available.
And finally, the Department of Veterans Affairs, John of Gaunt from Richard II.
Of course, as we would all know. I have some questions about your housing and human development thing, but we can come back to that later.
Any questions on any of these positions, just tweet us. I'll answer them all via Twitter.
Specifically, Dan. Question number two. Arthur Ackerman wrote to us on Facebook at facebook.com. No Holds Barredcast to ask a homework question. But since I don't trust Dan even a tiny iota of a bit, I can't use it as a homework question because I'm pretty sure he will have seen it. Though it is a good question, so I want to use it anyway, so it's here in the duel. Anyways, Arthur asks, why does Hal allow Falstaff to take credit for the killing of Hotspur? Doing so seems to defer his regal reformation by a whole play. Why put it off? Dan.
Sure. I actually think this is a critical moment in his regal reformation. I'll tell you why. I think that a younger Hal actually would have just called him out right then and there and been like, Falstaff, you're lying. I did that. You didn't do it. But it's actually a sign of his maturity that he decides to wait and not be baited by this behavior from Falstaff. Also, I think this may be the moment for Hal where he decides later in the play when he's like, I know you not. This may be the moment where he's like, this is why I don't know you.
Falstaff.
Yeah. This is why I need to disown Falstaff. Sure, you can take credit for this, but there will be repercussions later, and it will be when I disown you in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. And this is also a moment of grace. This is a moment of grace for Henry in that he's choosing to rise above the those sort of boyish reactionary moments and mm-hmm. say, I will just not respond right away. Think about it and respond appropriately later.
Mm-hmm. Always forgive, never forget. One of my touchstones.
That's it.
Different play, but you know. I agree. Later in the scene, Hal says, if a lie may do thee grace, I'll gild it with the happiest terms I have. Basically saying, if it means that much to you to say that you did this, even though I literally know it wasn't you.
Yeah.
But you know what? It means more to you than it does to me at this point. So go bananas.
Sure.
I think that is a benevolence. It is, you know, it's something I didn't think about it in the other way that like he's setting a trap and, you know, I see you what you are basically.
Ah.
And I think another part of it is kind of like, you know, he says in other parts of the play that basically like he'll be a king later. He's yeah. kind of like sowing his wild oats now. It's like before you go on a diet, you eat all the crap that you won't be able to eat later.
Right.
And I think he's laid the groundwork of he will be regal later. He just would rather put it off and have another play's worth of fun before he gets there.
Right. What's the rush?
Yeah, right. It'll still be there. He knows that there's plenty more, you know, based on Messenger Day, there's about 8 hours more of yeah. this to go. So
yeah. A lot of dope verse to drop before we get there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, question number three. Finally, Emily Gans emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com to let us know she used our So You're Going to See As You Like It episode last week, and she found it super helpful. We helped.
Nice job.
She also came away from the production with a question. She writes, in the production, it was pretty clear Orlando figured out that Ganymede was Rosalind before the big reveal at the end. Do you think this is a fair interpretation of the text? And if so, at what point does Orlando figure it out? I think that it, you know, sure, you can do it that way. You can do whatever you want. You know, there's not anything in the text either. You know, there's nothing in the text that indicates that he does. But there also isn't that he doesn't.
Right.
But I feel like that kind of makes Rosalind look like an idiot.
Right.
Right? That it's like, one of them needs to be a doofus in this situation, and Orlando wears it much better as someone who doesn't know a ruse is in play, as opposed to Rosalind doing a crappy ruse.
Right.
You know? Also, Orlando as the white meat baby face of the canon, like, he can still pull this off just being a, you know, a well-meaning idiot.
Right.
And just not getting it. I just feel like for all the misdirection roles, whether it's the pants roles, twin roles, pants role characters in with twins, like,
right.
It works best when nobody knows until the moment of revelation.
Right.
So does it, is it a fair interpretation? Yes. Is it the best interpretation? I would say no.
Sure. I would actually take it a step further and say it's not a fair interpretation.
Okay.
That it is a typical cheap choice by a hack actor who is like, well, I'm smart and I would never do this.
Orlando.
Right. This is the person who's just like, I don't know how this is possible. I know. What if I know all along? And it's like, okay, so then why do the play? Like,
right.
What's the point?
Right.
You rob so many moments of magic,
mm-hmm.
moments of some of those choices that become like, oh, I'm really attracted to Ganymede, but I shouldn't be, but I can't because I love Rosalind, mm-hmm. and I'm confused by that. But if it's like, oh, no, I know it's Rosalind. It's just like, it's just a cheap choice.
Yeah.
I don't think it's supported by the text at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment when it happens in the text doesn't exist.
Right.
Because it happens when he says, you are my Rosalind.
Mm-hmm.
That's you.
Right.
And then the whole play makes sense. That's why you have five acts.
Right.
This actually is what Arthur Ackerman is talking about. Like, they don't put it off because it's only in the moment of discovery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and it's much more interesting for an audience to see it happen.
Right.
Than have it be some cerebral, like, oh, I know what's happening here. I'm just going to pretend for three acts.
Right.
If that's the case, I'll leave it intermission.
Right, exactly. Well, there you go. That is how we duel. If you have a question you'd like to see featured in a future edition of The Duel, please send it our way. We are at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @noholdsbarredcast, and we are on Facebook @facebook.com. No Holds Barred Cast. Daniel.
Yes.
Shall we do some homework?
Let's do that.
Mortals, perchance you wonder at this show, but wonder on till truth makes all things plain.
This is the part of the program where I pull a Shakespearean homework question from the internet, and Dan and I do our best to pull together a coherent answer, no matter how stupid the question or how pressing the deadline. This episode's question comes from Redditor The Oran Dude under the heading...
Can I get a spelling, please?
The A-R-A-N Dude, all one word.
That's what I guessed. Great.
Under the heading, choose a character in Shakespeare's novel King Lear and relate it to someone in today's society. They ask, basically... What I'm asked to do is choose a character from King Lear, I chose Edmund, and relate him to someone in our current society. I can't choose Trump because that topic has been chosen already, and I'm kind of stuck on that.
Oh, well, that's only option.
Right, it's over.
Right.
The Eren Dude. Basically, what I'm asked to do is choose a character from King Lear, I chose Edmund, and relate him to someone in our current society. Trump is off the board.
So are we stuck to Edmund for this?
I think we should start with Edmund.
All right.
And then we can, if you want a freestyle later in the period, because let's help the Eren Dude.
The Eren Dude.
Sure. So we are looking for to relate Edmund to someone in today's society, not Donald Trump category.
Great.
So Dan, first thoughts.
First thoughts are, let's figure out who we think Edmund is, I think. Might be the right way to go.
Yeah.
So... in reading, and I think everyone knows, everyone who listens to this podcast at least knows, coming fresh off of production of King Lear. So these characters are quite fresh for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do my best to disassociate Edmund from our production and Edmund. The things that we know about Edmund is that he is outside the circle.
Right.
He's an outsider. He has a chip on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
He's a son.
Right.
Legitimacy comes into question.
Sure.
For him, he's very legitimate. For others, he's labeled as illegitimate.
Right.
In the middle of some sort of romantic scandal.
Sure, there's definitely some sort of sexual overtones to his whole thing. And what I had was that, you know, he's started, you know, tying into the illegitimacy. He's starting from the bottom and has cut every corner, taken every edge, doesn't really care too much about how it relates to others, but really grabbed onto every foothold he could get.
Yeah.
To pull himself up to where he is.
Right.
With that chip on his shoulder.
I think I have it.
Hit me.
Tom Brady. As Edmund.
I'm very interested. Go on.
This is someone who is, you know, he was a 6th round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
America's darling. Unless you're not from New England. Wait, so.
Not America's darling.
I mean, he is, in my eyes.
Well, no, now he is, but not when he was drafted.
Right, now when he's drafted. Someone who is just illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
He was a backup in college. Mm-hmm. A backup is a pro.
Mm-hmm.
He has been involved in scandals,
mm-hmm.
for better and for worse.
Of little merit.
Very little
except
merit.
Except for, well, of relating to the NFL, not perhaps relating to his illegitimate child.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about, if you ask... Most football fans about Tom Brady, they'll say he's a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
but he's just the greatest.
Of course, yeah.
And he has a huge chip on his shoulder.
Right.
At all times.
Right, as the 199th overall pick. I mean, I actually think in another 20 years, his two kids could be Edmund Edgar, because he has the legitimate... What's his...
Let me get our producers on the phone real quick.
I'm pointing to our producer behind the glass to pull this up for me. I know the initials of the kid he had with Bridget Moynihan, the kid's initials are Jet Brady.
So he has John Edward Thomas Moynihan.
You know, he's the one that's going to have the illegitimate monologue.
Right.
That's Bridget Moynihan's son.
Then Ben Brady and Vivian Lake Brady.
Right, who are...
With Giselle?
Giselle. Yes, of course, you may have heard of her. So, but in the meanwhile, perhaps we have multiple generations. And then, so then that begs the question, who is Edgar to Brady's Edmund? I have an idea.
Go on.
Was it Peyton Manning?
Sure.
I mean, the only difference is Edgar wins in the end. Suck on that. So my the answer that I had come up with, I also wanted to. I was trying to think of somebody in popular culture who had kind of skipped across various footholds and like had made the most of every, starting from nothing and made the most of every random foothold to get to their next random foothold until they achieved a position of power.
Sure.
So. Go with me on this.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
Starts as an Austrian bodybuilder.
Right.
That's what he does. Comes to America. He was actually in the Austrian army and was doing bodybuilding competitions on the side. Then comes to America. Somebody sees him and casts him in some exploitation, like Hercules knockoff, like
right.
B-movie. And so he switches from his success in bodybuilding to being a terrible actor.
Right.
Then becomes a decent actor, uses that parlays his bodybuilding thing into actually succeeding into acting.
Yeah.
Then he takes the fame coming out of acting, marries into the Kennedys, and becomes a governor.
Sure.
So I feel like that's a slow 30-year burn for him just to like, come from a dude who lifts weights to being the governor of California, married into one of the most like preeminent families in the country.
Right. And Edmund certainly makes some political moves in the course of Lear that are significant.
I mean,
he is the Earl of Gloucester by the middle to end of the play.
Right.
And with eyes on becoming more.
Right.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I also think I would love to see Schwarzenegger as Edmund. Maybe you could get Danny DeVito to play Edgar, like in Twins. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess now they're too old for it. But you could find someone else to play.
Do you have Thou Nature available in your back pocket in a Schwarzenegger accent?
I do not have a Schwarzenegger. I do not. No. Friend of the pod.
Why bastard? Therefore base. Could be good.
Oh, it's Augustus Gloop just came in.
Love Augustus Gloop, also available.
Someday we'll have to do a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory casting sesh.
You have talked me into it.
All right. Well, you can look forward to that.
Wildly available for that.
Emphatically available. So, yeah, we didn't really – I don't really know how to turn this into a five-paragraph essay like we are wont to do.
Well, I think for both –
let's go with Brady.
Brady and Schwarzenegger.
Brady is more compelling
both.
To me. Yeah.
Oh, great. You just – I think that you give the answer. You give your thesis. It's this person. Here are the three reasons. Outsider, chip on the shoulder – and let's see, what would the third be for Brady? Scandal?
Scandal, yeah.
You know, and then...
Not afraid of scandal, yeah.
Just goes headlong into it, and that's what makes him the greatest of all time.
Yeah, so there you go.
Edmund, greatest bastard. Brady, greatest quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Edmund had 201 wins as of this recording.
How about that?
Did you know that?
If he had survived the end of Lear, he could have gone on to win 201 games.
Big 202.
Well, there you go. You're welcome, the Iran dude. That is how we do a little bit of homework, Dan.
Yes.
Shall we do some everyday shakes?
Why not?
This is the section of the show where we pull a phrase from Shakespeare and show you how to use it in your everyday conversation. This week's phrase is "the readiness is all," as featured in Act 5, Scene 2 of Hamlet. Let's hear the phrase in context. You will lose this wager, my lord.
I do not think so. Since he went into France, I have been in continual practice. I shall win at the odds. But thou wouldst not think how ill all's here about my heart, but it is no matter.
Nay, good my lord.
Nay, it is but foolery.
If your mind dislike anything, obey it. I will forestall their repair hither and say you are not fit.
Not a whit. We defy augury. There's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be now, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all. Since no man knows aught of what he leaves, what is to leave betimes?
That is The Readiness Is All, as featured in Act 5, Scene 2 of Hamlet.
Yes.
Daniel,
yes.
Can you give us a little context on
yes.
this?
So Osric has just come in. Hamlet's just back, fresh off the boat from having sent Rosgil to their death. He has come back, basically broken up Ophelia's funeral. Osric comes in, he's like, do you want to duel with Laertes? And he's like, sure. So they're going to get the foils ready, and then they give the odds. The king has laid some odds on the duel, and Horatio's like, dude, you're not going to win. And Hamlet's like, no, I've been practicing a lot. I think I can win at these odds. But at the same time, I have this weird sort of like feeling about my heart. Like my heart's racing. And Horatio's like, dude, listen to that. Listen and get out of this battle. And he's like, no. I don't live my life by omens.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If it's going to happen today, it'll happen today. If it's going to happen tomorrow, it'll happen tomorrow. All we know is it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So just have to be ready for it whenever it happens.
Mm-hmm.
The readiness is all.
Yeah. So, you know, right. So I feel like this is exactly what you're, you know, it's that you are ready for whatever is to come, not so much mattering what is to come.
Right.
But, you know, being braced for it. The first thing that comes to my mind about this is like, you know, when you're nervous about an upcoming performance or a presentation or an
sure.
interview or a date or whatever, you know, you can go down a panic spiral and just like worry and panic and get nervous about all the things that could go wrong or like what you should do or what could, you know, what could go hard. But really what it comes down to is just like, get yourself as prepared as you can.
Yep.
Do, you know, put yourself in a position to succeed and then just relax.
Right.
Because, like, by panicking about it, you know, like, by worrying about it to the second that you're in there and then you're being all awkward in the interview, it's not helpful.
Right.
So just prepare yourself and bring that and know that because the readiness is all.
The readiness is all.
And you can freaking relax when you're getting interviewed.
Right. So working in this restaurant in Times Square, we have, as restaurant folk will know, our annual health inspection.
Oh boy.
Which is a pretty big deal in New York City. If you've frequented restaurants in New York, you'll see all those signs with the A, B, C, great
close.
Ending, close forever. And that, you know, there's a whole other school of thought about the racket that is the health inspection because they'll peg you for $20,000 in fines when you're in a gorgeous restaurant. Who can afford it? And then you go into a place where your feet stick to the floor and they're like, we have an A. And you're like, okay.
I doubt it.
But anyway, we were due for our inspection in mid-October, right before I left for 6 weeks, basically.
Right.
So I was like, this is great. I'm leaving in time for the health inspection. But when I got back, it still hasn't happened.
So you're due.
We are overdue. Mm-hmm. We were due in October. So every day, like our managers are just, they look so tired, but it's because every day it's like, this is the day. And it's like, guys, just stop. Just sleep. The readiness is all.
Mm-hmm.
We're ready. Like when they come, we'll be ready. We've gotten A's every day in our practice test.
Sure.
And you know, just prepare yourself.
Well, it's funny. The bagel place around the corner got a B this spring. And for like 3 glorious months all summer, there was no line in there.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I'd go in there, I'd just walk straight to the front of the line. They'd have my coffee ready.
Yeah.
Then it got the A back, and now it's like, you know, all Brooklyn parents with their goddamn strollers clogging up the line, ordering gluten-free ham whole wheat wraps because they got their A back. So
yeah.
I wish they were a little less ready. Another example that, you know, as a compulsive over-preparer, I really like this phrase. I could find a lot of places for this.
Sure.
You know, I work in budgets.
Yes.
So I am constantly worrying about spending money on things. And, you know, sometimes you work on things that are very expensive and people keep coming up to you and saying, hey, this is going to be very expensive. You're the budget guy. I'm sure you're super concerned about this, that this is how expensive this is. And you know what? If you budget properly, if you know it was going to be that expensive, it's fine. The readiness is all. I knew what this was going to be. I'm prepared for it.
Yep.
We did our homework, and here the readiness is all. We knew it was going to be expensive. It's when you didn't know it was going to be expensive, and you are unready. That
right.
It is deeply problematic.
Right.
But, you know, so it's another place where the readiness is all when I am budgeting. So now I will drop that in my budget conversations and no one will get it. But it's fun to know. It's just fun to know that it's out there.
Well, in the theater world, they might get it. Hopefully. Let us hope.
Maybe.
Maybe. We, speaking of our world, we have a holiday party coming up.
Yeah.
Hey, holiday party. On Sunday. And shout out to Noreen Condarda.
Hi, Ma.
We love Noreen. And the story I think that we've talked about is having food prepared for the party.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we have something like 123 invites out on Facebook.
Sure.
And realistically, we'll probably have 15 to 20 people here at all times, mm-hmm. and it'll rotate through the night. But when planning the menu, it's like, how do you know how much to cook?
Right.
How much to have prepared? Like, you just got to have it.
You just got to have it all. You got to be ready in case all 125 people show up.
If they all roll in, I got to have those Swedish meatballs ready to go.
Right.
We'll have things on backup.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, if 20 come, we'll have food for 20. If 120 come, we'll have food for them. If not, we'll eat it later.
And we will, as we are still finishing up the Thanksgiving feast that you made a week and a half ago.
Yeah, well,
what did you say is on tap?
Turkey Reubens in about half an hour.
That's going to be the episode. Goodbye, everyone.
But you never know who's coming through. So.
Right. I actually don't have any other ones.
I have several more.
Lay it on me.
I mean, I think this is, I know we just talked about Tom Brady in the last segment, but this is the quintessential Bill Belichick phrase.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, what's your plan for next week? The readiness is all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing else to talk about. We're just getting ready. I also think that when you're hanging out with quote unquote that friend.
Okay.
That's like, I don't know what tonight's going to bring, but I know like that guy from the other side of the country is coming through.
Right.
So I might want to make sure I'm just ready for anything.
Right. I'm going to eat some pizza. I'm going to eat some breads. I'm going to set a base.
Yep.
I'm going to be ready to go where the evening takes me.
Worst case scenario, I'm well fed and I'm in bed by 6.
Exactly.
Otherwise, I'm going to survive. I will just hang on.
Is that 6 a.m. or p.m. in that hypothetical?
That's the 6 p.m.
Oh, interesting.
Because the other side is I'm going to be in bed by 6.
Right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Mabes.
Mabes. All right.
Yeah, so.
Well, there you go. The readiness is all. Use it in your everyday conversation and let us know about it. Let us know how you you slide it in.
What?
To your everyday conversation.
Great.
All right. Banter, plugs, corrections, word of the week. Daniel, what have you got for us?
I have got some work to do on banter. So, Kev, what do you have first leading us off?
So, the first thing, just to say, we are kind of out of order in our episodes. We have not forgotten that we owe you another wild card episode from November as we catch up and get everything back on track.
Right.
We do have one coming. Hopefully, it will follow this episode on Wednesday, but we didn't want to hold this one up. To make sure you don't miss, and we will put it out as soon as it is ready. So that may be Thursday, that may be Friday, that may not be until next week. But to make sure you don't miss it, you should be subscribed and it'll just show up on your phone, which I wouldn't say, except I haven't said it in a while. So
really?
You should be subscribed to us.
We haven't said that?
Yeah, I say it every week in passing, but this is a more concrete example of why you should be subscribed.
More direct approach.
Yeah.
I like that.
We got an email from Lisa B addressed to, quote, you fine dashing fellows.
Oh, hey.
End quote. Hey, Lisa B.
What's up, Lisa B? Lisa A in my book.
Which we will definitely take. She writes, quote, this is to request that you do a replay of the moment Dan uses the word of the week at the end of the show, since I, like Kevin, often miss it. Maybe the replay could be in slow motion, end quote. Well, Lisa B., I would love to, but I often don't actually hear it the first time through or the second time through or the third time through because Dan so rarely uses it. So, Dan, perhaps you could, you know, actually use it in a way that the segment intended it
to
be used.
I don't think Lisa B. is Lisa A. anymore. She's Lisa F. in my book now. So, Lisa F., why don't you come hither and I'll... When we replay this in a slow motion.
Is the word of the week or are we getting a call to HR?
For what? I'm also in charge of HR.
That's a horrifying thought. Our Patreon. In case you missed it, our Patreon is live at patreon.com/.
Slash!
Okay, Jesus.
That was mine!
Okay, you're gonna do it every time? You got that too?
I forgot. Yeah.
All right. No holds. Okay, let's do it again then. Our Patreon is live at patreon.com.
Slash.
Ooh, it's a classy one. No holds barred. That's available for anyone who enjoys the podcast and has the means and the interest in supporting us financially as we try to grow the show, whether by improving our equipment, doing more advertising, or expanding the kind of programming we can do. For example, the wild card you'll hopefully be hearing shortly after this episode should be a shining example of the type of things that we can do as we expand moving forward. Another thing may be the improved audio quality. that you're hearing this week, or the more distracted version of our voices, because we have a brand new fancy recording rig that we're working with right now.
We're actually feet from each other, and I can make eye contact with you, which is at times frightening.
It's horrible. And like, there are like real microphones, and there are wires on the table, and there's an expensive piece of equipment with like readouts, and there's sound bars. It's very professional, but this is why I've at least been kind of distracted, because there's a lot of inputs right now, including Dan's stupid face right across the table.
Here comes a fist right across the table right at you.
I'm just outside of your wingspan. But these are the type of things that we are starting to roll out in the hopes that people will help us out. And as a sign of thanks for supporting the show, if you pledge $10 before December 25th, Dan and I will send you a customized 12th night card. It's like a holiday card, but it's 12 days later. We'll send it on January 6th. And our 12th night cards will feature Dan and I choosing a Shakespeare quote, or a line from Shakespeare, and then we're going to write notes on it back and forth to each other, probably kind of inappropriate and mean-spirited, and then we'll send that to you to get you in that post-holiday spirit.
Yeah.
And you can do that at patreon.com.
/no holds barred. Try that again.
Okay, you can do it at patreon.com.
/no holds barred.
Right. And before we get off of that, now we want to give big thanks to our first donors. We had three people jump in this week. Meg Anderson, Sam Buchanan, and Patricia Hope. Hop. Patricia, tell me how you say your last name, H-O-P-P-E. Thank you so much to the three of you for being the earliest adopters on there and making sure we don't look like a bunch of jerks with a big zero on our Patreon page.
Really appreciate
that. Very helpful.
If you're on Twitter and you're not following either of us, shame.
Shame.
Shame. However, you'll all be very excited to know we talked about the Grinch last year around this time on No Holds Barred. And I'm doing a 50 episodes for 50 anniversary of Grinch. So follow at Dan Bonos on Twitter. This is very Shakespearean stuff.
I have a question. Yeah, but what's the 50 for 50? What's the 50th?
This is the 50th anniversary of the Grinch coming out.
Got it.
So I'm viewing Ron Howard's The Grinch 50 times in 1 month and tweeting about each viewing, which is very exciting stuff.
He's actually doing it too. He's always watching it every time I come out of my bedroom, just watching.
And tweeting. And talking about different things. We talked about hair. One of these times, as a commitment to you, our faithful, no holds barred listeners, one viewing will be entirely about the Shakespearean elements of Ron Howard's The Grinch. Mm-hmm. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Mm-hmm. So let's get involved. Let's talk.
Okay.
On the Twitters.
And what's your Twitter handle?
At Dan Bo Knows. Dan, BEAUKNOWS.
Nailed it.
All the way.
To follow up on the Patreon thing, if you don't have the means or, quite frankly, the interest in supporting us financially but still want to help us out, you definitely can do that by giving us a rating and a review on iTunes so we can try to keep a foothold in the top 200 performing arts podcast. We got a fresh review this week from M. Hills, who wrote, quote, "Gotta love a podcast that includes Shakespeare, puns, and random theater geekery. One only downside is updates aren't that frequent, so I always have a moment of confusion when it pops into my feed." A palpable hit for us over the past 6 weeks. Sorry, M and everyone, but hopefully it will become more frequent or regular on Will Shakespeare Wednesdays from here on out.
Yeah, I think that she must be a new listener, because we were pretty good for a solid 2 years. We just had a rough patch for the past month and a half or so.
And we're on the other side. We have microphones.
Right.
We're looking at each other.
This may be
the end of the line, but
very beautiful. It's very beautiful view for you, Kev.
I'm sure your vision is that way. Word of the week, or do you have other banter?
No, that's it.
All right. Word of the week. I hope it's it's part of the sexual harassment thing that you did in the middle of the episode there, but I don't know, what word it would be. I don't know. What was it?
You don't have it?
No.
Hither.
Okay, yeah.
Come hither.
So it was okay, good.
Yes, it's right in the... Right, I don't know what you're talking about with sexual harassment.
I mean, you said... Okay, I'm not going to revisit it.
That was, I think, a pretty generous offer.
Oh, my God.
Is this getting awkward?
This
is getting awkward.
I wish we were in different rooms.
Check this out. Pick this up. I'm going to bring the microphone over and give you a nice slap.
Are you kidding me right now?
How does this work?
All right. Good to know.
Stop
moving.
I'll fix that for next month.
Oh my God, this is horrifying. We're going back to doing this over Skype next week.
Turkey Rubens!
Hither. All right, that's a good one.
Yeah, thanks. I thought so too.
Anything else? You all set?
No, I'm ready. Ooh, oh.
Oh, right. Oh, good. Now I get to see the panic firsthand. You have one job. You don't prepare for it.
I always prepare.
All right, folks. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can support the show by pledging at patreon.com.
Slash.
No holds barred. You can tweet at us at No Holds Bardcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ No Holds Bardcast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, oh shoot. Uh-oh. We forgot to weigh the merits of Steve Bannon's Space Titus, which upon further review actually is probably for the best for both of us based on the current political climate.
Correct.
Anyways, we'll try harder next time. Till then, my name is Kevin.
Dan's my name. Give to our Patreon. I'll do the same.
Adieu, adieu,
nope.
Adieu, 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 adieu.